Hello, sustainable life podcast audience. So great to be back after many, many moons. Today on the show, we have Vibhuti Bhatia from South Asians for Sustainability. Welcome to the show, Vibs.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
You're such an amazing human being. I think a lot of people adore you for many, many reasons, and I'm excited to have our audience get to know you. So, first question right off the bat is, can you tell us about yourself? Who is
Yeah, for sure. I'm gushing as you're saying that, but yeah, I would try and summarize. So, hi everyone. I'm Vibhuti, also known as Vibs. I am a sustainability consultant, managing consultant in social sustainability. I founded South Asians for Sustainability back in 2020. And I'm also a fusion musician, so spin lots of plates, singing and performing alongside kind of my campaigning work.
That is so beautiful. Do you mind telling us a little bit more about you, who you are as a person? I mean, you're talking about these things like as if it's no big deal. I spin a lot of plates. I'm a musician. I have this amazing organization that does a lot of great things in the world. And then also, I'm a consultant. No big deal. So if you could break that down for us, that'd be great.
Guess that goes to a lot of like one important value. So I guess that's I owe that to that, but thank you. So I actually from a young age grew up in a very spiritual community. I've been a part and a member of the Nirankari Mission since my whole life, and through that is when music came. So from a very young age, learned the harmonium and used to sing bhajans, geets, shabads. So my spiritual foundations and bond to nature, to creation, came through music, I feel, from a very young age. And then alongside that, a lot of volunteering and seva throughout, the years with my family and my wider community, of which a lot was conservation work as well. And I guess through my education, had always a love for psychology and understanding human beings. So at university, I actually studied social sciences and psychology. But I had an incredible lecturer in one module that I did in one semester, and it was on global challenges. And I had like a very cliche penny drop moment in that time where I had this massive urge in me, and I realized like climate change is such a huge issue that is facing our generation. I never thought I could work in this space. I never had I guess, any thinking as a career I could pursue this. But it just in that moment, I knew. I was like, okay, I need to pivot and I need to learn how I can now give back and, do my best in helping and having an impact in this space. So for the first part of my career, I worked and volunteered with a lot of NGOs. I was in Indonesia for a while, and then came to the UK and went into kind of retail, the retail industry in electronics, and worked in that sustainability space. So when it came to e-waste and electricals, a lot of the kind of corporate social responsibility and community development work within that company. I worked there for a couple of years and had a real development and understanding of what sustainability within business means. And alongside that entire time, obviously music continued. It was a hobby, but it was also a huge enriching part and really fulfilling part of my life. And I've had the opportunity to work with and collaborate with so many incredible artists, and still do to date as part of the Orchestral Cavalli team. But that was simultaneously happening throughout, I guess, my education and my first job in corporate space. And during that time, I guess COVID happened as well, had a lot more reflection time. And when I was seeking mentorship about where I wanted my career to go and how I can balance both worlds at that time in my mind, both music and creative arts, as well as my work in sustainability, I searched for a space for South Asian people, or South Asian professionals working in either climate change, sustainability, any kind of social purpose, field just to see if there was guidance that they could give me about how I can do both. And when I searched for any kind of space online, any forums, any groups on Facebook, nothing existed for South Asian people. It was mainly diversity and sustainability, more broadly speaking, or it was specific activists who were doing incredible work and had huge recognition, rightly so, for their work. But no one was tying it all together. No one was showing the voices of South Asian people and what the incredible work they were achieving and impact they were having. So instead of finding mentorship, I kind of saw a gap. And I was like, okay, if no one else is doing this, someone has to, because there will be other people in my position who want to find out more from people who are like-minded and have the same cultural background. And that's how South Asians for Sustainability was born. It was a COVID baby project, and I networked online with people on LinkedIn and Facebook groups and found some incredible people who've been around for years doing incredible work. But they'd never been spotlighted from a heritage perspective. They'd had huge success in their career, but no one talking about, okay, we are South Asian, but we are also doing this, 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 this. And part of the grassroots online campaign highlights and spotlights those people. We've had so many now. The communities, you know, of professionals is over 200 that we've built, and lots of the community follow as well, like a lot of the content that we share. And through that, mentorship opportunities come about, because people find people who look like them and you know, can relate to them in so many different industries and sectors. And so they can see, okay, I'm an engineer, or I'm a scientist, or I'm a business entrepreneur, and this is how I can link in purpose, whether it's social, people related, or environmental. This is how I can progress, and I've got someone I can speak to. And then I guess the second part of it was when I thought about sustainable daily life actions and choices, a lot of the things growing up in UK, I should have probably said, yeah, if you can't tell already, I'm from the UK, I live in London. But
no, really?
there was nothing really, when it came to sustainable solutions, nothing culturally relevant available. Like, we have such huge weddings, food is such a huge part of our culture. Music and arts is such a big part of you know, who we are as communities. But no one would say, okay, Diwali is coming up, this is how you can be more sustainable. Or we have this Eid or Ramadan festival, there's so many religious events, or we have a huge wedding coming up, we have to buy all these new outfits. Like, no, like, there are alternative ways, solutions that are less impactful on the environment and actually support South Asian people and you know, garment workers, if we think about the fashion industry, who are better supported taking a different route. And you know, human rights and exploitation is so huge in South Asia, and often it just gets kind of like brushed under the carpet. It's an elephant in the room. Even if that is the case, there's another, I guess, aspect of and community that they don't even know this stuff happens. And so they're unaware, and there's unconscious, like, or not even unconscious, just unaware, uneducated. They don't know these things happen and this exploitation is happening. And the disconnect then lies there. So between us as a diaspora region and then South Asian countries and people on the ground there, it's, for me, the platform is about joining that and bridging it, and hearing those voices through the lens of the content and the resources we share, as well as from a career perspective. It's a very long-winded question, answer to your question. But yeah, that's how the campaign came about. And alongside that, consulting also happened. So I guess that's, wow, my day job, my 9-to-5.
I'm so excited for this conversation, because I have probably at least 10 questions that I have sort of brainstormed in the meantime, like, oh my gosh, I need to ask Bibbs her opinion on this. But I want to start with your music, because I think that's just so beautiful and so unique, is that spiritual connection that you have. Mm-hmm. And for the listeners who are unaware of the significance of singing bhajans and the harmonium, my guess is your background is Sikhism.
Not, religion? I guess heritage is Punjabi, okay. But the organization, Centre Inquiry Mission, that I'm a part of, we have a Guruji and a spiritual guide, and it's very humanitarian based. So we celebrate a lot of the scripture from all religions, and try and find the unity and the similarities of what they're all teaching, essentially. But yeah, Punjabi heritage.
Amazing. Because when I was young, I was reading about Guru Nanak Ji, who's created Sikhism, and how one of his best friends was Hindu and the other best friend was Muslim. And that's basically the creation of the hymns that exist in the mm-hmm. Sikhi culture. And so he got the teachings from one and then the Sufi inspiration from the other, and created mm-hmm. these hymns to teach, you know, the wider public the teachings in a way that we understand, which is through art, through music. Mm-hmm. So that's yeah. really, really beautiful that that's your foundation. That just makes me like go gaga over you. You're so cool. Uh-huh. And then while we're talking, I started to think about your mention of overconsumption in our mm-hmm. communities. So not just Diwali, but weddings. And I think we're in a really unique position in which we both have similar values, but we also exist in a community where I think there's a lot of ignorance is bliss that sort of goes on in and around it. So it's not just the overconsumption of, you know, outfits when you're at weddings, but something as simple as buying milk at Costco, like, pardon me for, you know, mentioning names, and being okay with factory farming because you're in the Western world, you know, you're no longer living mm-hmm. in India where the milkman comes to your door. What's your opinion mm-hmm. on the overconsumption that exists in our culture and or in our community in the Western world?
I think, like, personally, like, I'm with you, but I think across, coming from a psychology background as well, has really helped me to understand why some of the reasons are for our community, I guess, overconsuming or feeling the need to live that way. And when we think of diaspora communities and migration patterns and the instability from a psychological perspective that was brought across by our ancestors and our grandparents and then now parents, I think there's a lot of intergenerational things to I guess uncover here and talk about and break down, because a lot when we think of us as South Asians living where we do live, and if we look at parents' habits and although some of them are very sustainable inherently because that's inherent to being South Asian, and those ancestral kind of traditions. Equally, there's a lot of sentimental hoarding that we see. There's a lot of need for, bulk buying, because of the, if we break it down from a really like human psychological level, it's, I guess, the fear of instability that they perhaps faced, and that's been passed down. So I know I'm going very kind of
that's very interesting
academic here. Yeah, but that's and that's how I try and understand why people have the consumption behavior patterns that they do, and why they choose to go for bulk buying over consumption, because it is essentially like stability, that they feel having more things, being able to you know, see those things and in a house that they've built from nothing, that sense of pride. And there's also a narrative as well of like the struggle that they went through to be able to provide a lifestyle that is more comfortable as human beings. And so I have conversations with community members here in the UK where they're like, well, our grandparents worked so hard to be able to provide this life for us, to be able to consume in this way. Why shouldn't we? Like, we've not had that stability for years and years before. And it's a perspective that I never truly understood of, like, saw as a different perspective before actually having these conversations. So it opened up to my eyes to a different way as well of thinking and why I guess that exists in our communities particularly. And often, you know, we touched on weddings already, like it can be seen as like a way to show status as well. or to show that that progression has been had and that they have a comfortable life. But when you break it down to a really human level, it is just primal, I guess, based on the instability that they faced years and years ago. It doesn't justify it from when we think of it from an impact perspective, and you know, it not being great for the environment or like the communities that are not supported in that, often South Asian communities, ironically. But I've learned to understand it from a different lens, even if my personal standpoint is, yeah, it's like those values don't align with me personally. I try and learn where they're coming from, and then trying to find a balanced approach and realistically on a practical level where they can come and where they can make those changes.
Awesome. I mean, when you were talking about that, it made me think about Christmas at my house. I am not materialistic at all. I would rather, you know, give experiences and have us all go skiing together and mm-hmm. call that a gift. Whereas my siblings would open up presents for me and be like, I can't, like, you just donated money so that a kid in another country could have their eyesight back. I can't do anything with this. And they didn't feel mm-hmm. good about it. So that was my experience growing up, and I sort of found a way to then give experiences as a result and hope that they would enjoy those. But how, in your opinion, you're talking about our grandparents and how, you know, our generation and maybe even our parents' generation feel like they need to live the life that our grandparents sort of, our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they just basically justifying their sacrifices and not justifying mm-hmm. their sacrifices. What am I trying to say? Like honoring their sacrifices. So we're living a life so that, you know, we're saying thank you to them for that. But in many ways, we also have to think about our grandchildren too, right?
Of course.
What kind of a life are we leaving behind for them or setting up for them? So what kind of advice do you have for people like you and I, who have these beliefs, know what's ahead, but also want to be able to share that with our loved ones so that they too mm. see, you know, how urgent this situation is? What can you share with us?
Honestly, I can talk from personal experience of like different family members and friends that I speak to. And you know, like many years ago, I used to feel it was really jarring, and I used to feel really triggered when I saw that they didn't get it, like, and they didn't see the urgency, and they didn't seem to care enough to make changes. And I guess as I've evolved and like talking to them in conversations, honestly, everyone in our community, or at least in my family and friendship circles, they will care about something. There will be something that does impact them emotively, and it will hit and strike a different chord that might not be directly linked to veganism. It might not be directly linked to sustainable fashion. It might be social development issues or education issues, or they might not connect to nature as much as they might connect to people, or vice versa. They may really care about animals, and they may really care about their food sources, and they might not really know much about anything to do in the fashion industry. These are just some day-to-day examples, I guess, or cleaning products, or you know, what we consume on a day-to-day. So in my experience, it's always been about when I have a conversation, it's okay, I understand that this person, you know, they care a lot about this sustainability topic and issue. So if I am gifting, or if I know that we were talking about gifting, or if I want to have a conversation with them, like I know that that's that one thing, I know that they care about that. And if that's something that they can do really, really well, at least that's one thing, right? Like in their day-to-day life that they can start there. Like they can start there, and maybe and hopefully with more education and resources available, they'll start to see how it's all interlinked and how it all really does make a difference for future generations. I know a lot of parents, South Asian parents particularly, who hear from their own kids learning at school, coming back with anxieties about you know, climate crisis and what it means for them. And that really stirs up in parents, because then they realize themselves when they're hearing it from their kids and not like activists like myself or you, or, you know, then it strikes a different chord. So I think it's a time and place as well, like when in their journeys, they're going to realize at different points. But I do fundamentally believe everyone has something that they care deeply about. And in sustainability, when we think of it, and the climate crisis is a part of that, but there's so many other things that are interlinked and it works as a system. So if, and we're all needed, right? If there's a fashion activist, if there's a food activist and a vegan, like we're all of in our individual actions, we're all needed for the greater whole and the greater impact.
That's a really, really good point. Thank you for that share. Let's talk about holidays. Because we talked about holidays. So just for some context, I was doing an Instagram live with Vids for South Asians for Sustainability, and we talked about holidays. And Diwali is right around the corner. I'm going to try my best to get this podcast released by Diwali. So do you want to talk about holidays, just any tips and tricks that you've kind of come across being a South Asian?
Yeah.
Not just Diwali, but anything.
For sure. Well, first of all, there are some incredible organizations that exist that are faith-based. So I know Sustainably Muslim is one, Hindu Climate Action in the UK, EcoSIC, and they always share resources that are linked to specific festivities. I've just named three there, but there are others. In the UK, there's also Faith for the Climate, and they are a grassroots organization that bring together people from all religions, and from a climate activism perspective. So any solutions and resources are readily available online for anyone who wants to go and look into that more deeply. Just look for Faith for the Climate on their website. But me, like I guess with Diwali coming up, you know, I again used to be very, very triggered by firecrackers and fireworks, and just hearing it would actually make Diwali really depressing for me, because I'd just lock myself in my room, have my headphones in, because I just didn't want to hear it. Like I genuinely felt such anger and frustration, especially with my neighbors who were just going for it. This was a few years ago. I've learned to, I guess, find a way to cope through it. But I will actively encourage my family as well. Like if you want to partake in fireworks or like see them, and you know, the kids love it. So they never, you know, they want to do something, and it can be core memories for children too. Go to parks or like larger spaces where a lot of people are watching the same fireworks show, so it's less emissions overall. And that's just, I mean, talking about Diwali and maybe New Year's celebrations as well.
Can I talk about fireworks show? That would be an interesting thing, just for people who aren't aware. I mean, there's obviously the toxic elements that go into the environment from them. There's the manufacturing practices that are very, very, I mean, it differs depending on what country you're from, but let's call a thing a thing. I mean, there's definitely human rights atrocities that are happening in those factories.
Yeah.
And disposing of the fireworks after the fact too, right? Environmental impact.
Yeah.
Anything else that you think?
Impact on furry friends. Yes. They are traumatized by the sound. The microplastics that I guess are there, we've talked about toxicity and the chemicals, pollution. I mean, when you think of it from a grand scale, fireworks are more limited in their impact, but that doesn't mean that they're fine and it's okay to continue, you know, on a personal level. If we aggregate the amount of emissions associated to firecrackers, they're huge. And I guess when we think of South Asia particularly, every time I've been to India a couple of times during Diwali season in the last 2-3 years, and the smog in northern regions in Delhi and Punjab, I mean, it's unbearable. All my family right now are already sick because of the smog that is in North India, and a lot of that is to do with fireworks despite the bans being in place in many regions. So like that is part of the pollution issue there, but there's a lot more. But you know, it all comes together, and I guess it's not good for
diverse abilities too.
Yeah.
Another thing I didn't think about is people with autism, etc. you have to respect those in your community too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it can be really triggering.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Next holiday. What else we got to share? Oh my gosh. We just talked about fireworks so far. There's so much more.
Diaz, we mentioned earlier, you can get more sustainable options, clay, going back to roots, desi ghee, or mustard oil and a bit of cotton. That goes so far, and it's so pretty and beautiful to light up your homes. When we think of the different occasions or festivities where we have a lot of food is such a big one, especially for us South Asians, we love our food and flavors, and rightly so. I mean, it's part of who we are, right? But there are always alternative options. I know for Christmas, for the last 2-3 years now, with my in-laws, we've always had a nut roast, which is delish. It's amazing. Instead of having traditional, I guess, meat or what is usually cooked in Christmas meals in the UK, at least. So that's a big one for us. And you can still add all those Indian spices and make it amazing. Like, it just is a more sustainable option. What else about holidays? There's so much. My mind is just
outfits,
gone.
Outfits. You were talking about outfits in our live as well.
Yeah. So weddings, occasions, Diwali, any bright colored festivals, Holi. Often, there's such a huge pressure, I think, in our community, or at least among friendship circles or whatever, like, you want new outfits, you want to look good, which is also like important for our own self-confidence and enjoying ourselves. But there are alternative options. I got married last year, and being Punjabi, like, having a trousseau was such a massive deal to my nanny and my mom. And I didn't get it. I was like, I already have so many amazing outfits. Why is it just because I'm getting married, I need like a load of new ones? So we managed to come up with a compromise, and I used their my nanny, my daddy, my great grandmother, my mom, their old saris and outfits, and I had them stitched into like Indo-Western suits, or I had like something made out of it, and I had them passed down, which is of so much more sentimental value to me, to have them upcycled, to see them when I'm wearing it, and then also have photographs of them wearing it as a traditional sari, and then me wearing it as something totally new, and being a showcase of being like British, but also Indian, and that fusion is so cool for me. And also, I know in North America, but particularly in the UK, I can speak to, there are pre-loved sites, South Asian clothing sites and rentals. So in the UK, Circular Thread in the last 2 years, and they're offering the service and platform to rent South Asian clothing, but also to sell. So you may have worn an outfit once or twice, and it's just lying in your cupboard. I know so many of us have that, but you might not want to wear it again. It might be outside, mixing, matching. That's another thing. So there's so many options when it comes to clothes.
I love that. Okay, awesome. Well, I think the best way to end off this podcast is by letting people know how to contact you and how to get more involved with South Asian sustainability. There are a lot of us out there, regardless of what industry we work in, who I think would be interested in your content. So if you don't mind sharing that.
Yeah, for sure. So you can find us on South Asians for Sustainability on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. We also have our website, southasiansforsustainability.com. If there's any way that we can help, or if there's any further content or resources that you'd like, please do reach out in our DMs or via email. We also have a Google form through our link on Linktree, which you can find on our pages. If you are doing some work and you'd like to chat with us, and if you think, we can spotlight what you're doing, there is a form that you can fill in, and I'd love to connect and hear from you, so we can platform your story and more about your career. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to chat.
Of course. Thank you for existing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Sustainable Life App's mission is to make sustainable living easy and convenient for you. Our digital platform includes a mobile app, free on Apple and Android, a website, podcast, and digital e-courses created to help you reduce your carbon footprint, all centered around our company's core values, the five factors for sustainable consumption. The first factor is impact on human health, the second, environmental impact, the third and fourth are respect for human rights and respect for animal rights, and the fifth is socioeconomic advantage or outlook, which translates to respecting your own and also everyone else's core values by realizing that no one is perfect, but we're all on our own respective life's journeys, doing our little bit whenever and wherever we can. Our app's mission is to help make sustainable consumption the new forever normal by connecting you, the consumers, with sustainable manufacturing brands and businesses all around the world. Do you want to know what types of businesses you can find on our app? Let me tell you. You can find local retail shops and boutiques, refill stores, grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, salons and spas, direct-to-consumer farm markets, recycling depots, repair shops, event venues, eco-hotels, eco-tours, and even eco-service providers like makeup artists, naturopaths, dog groomers, anything and almost everything, and much more. You, as an app user, can add sustainable businesses in your area to the app at any time also by clicking the Add a Business button that you can find in the app. We're constantly adding new exciting features and sections to our app. In 2024, we'll be releasing a free carbon footprint calculator to it, and we have also recently released e-courses that teach you how to reduce your carbon footprint in an easy-to-manage way. We promise to keep growing along with you on your journey. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bunsal, M. Bunsal, CE Sustainable Life Incorporated, or any of its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you so much for being an important part of our community. The love and light in me salutes the love and light in you. See you next time.